This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome to the Chelsea Fancast Friday night preview show, because of course it is Friday. It's just past 7 o'clock. Anybody who had 1903 in the Mixler, when will these lazy bar stewards start the show sweepstake, then you won. So that's all I can say. So there is no prize, just the honour of knowing that you were right.
I think it should always be 1905, because that's when the club was founded.
That's not a bad idea, but it would render the sweepstake null and void, wouldn't it?
Yeah, okay.
So there is always that. I am Stanford Chidge, obviously, and of course the person who chirped up there with the good but not very good idea was, of course, Jonathan Kidd.
Cruel, very cruel.
Well, true. Hello. True.
Lovely to be on the show, as always.
Lovely to see you. Mate, I have to say, this week has just been so mad. I feel like I saw you 5 minutes ago on Monday. Your little face staring at me down Zoom. It's just
a little
bizarre.
Face.
Yeah.
Little
you had a good face. Week?
Interesting. Thank you very much, as always, mm-hmm. at the moment. Thank you. Yeah, you enjoyed it. Yeah.
Good. And, of course, you were at the game on Tuesday night, and you did another fan bite, and we will be talking about that very, very soon. But before we do that, of course, we've also got the lovely Dane with us.
Evening, everyone. Always an absolute treat to be on here with you lot, even if it is a substitution for Dean Mears, you know.
Yes, you're subbing for Dean, aren't you, tonight? Although there's a good reason for that, because Dean has got a second baby has arrived, and he's got his hands rather full, I suspect.
Yeah, he has, really, really full at the moment. Yeah, he's taking a break from Twitter and concentrating on new baby. And I thought someone else would take it up, but they never did. So yeah, you got me again.
I'm absolutely delighted that we have Dane 2 weeks in a row, but I think it says a lot about everybody else. Not even a reply.
I think we should just call you Super Sub Dane. And just accept it, you know.
Flo.
Yeah. I like that. So there we go. So we've got Dane, me, JK, and Dane, as always. And of course, it feels like as always, because I think pretty much for the entire season so far, we've been very lucky and privileged to have the lovely Adam Newson from Football.London with us on a Friday to give us the press angle. So, Adam, how lovely to see you yet again.
As always, guys, thank you very much for letting me come back again and talking about everything that we love about Chelsea.
Excellent. Well, indeed it is. And I have to say, before we start talking about stuff that's happened this week, I have to congratulate you on a fantastic interview. Seb Knessel, you did an interview with him that was absolutely brilliant. And I loved reading it. But please tell us how you managed to get that together.
To be honest, it wasn't hard. It was a simple case of messaging him on Instagram and asking if he'd wanted to talk. A player that I basically very much remembered from playing Championship Manager in my sort of early teens. And given the influence Germany's had on Chelsea in the last few months, I thought it'd be interesting to sort of delve back into Chelsea's first ever German player and hear his story. And it was not really what I was expecting to hear, to be honest. Obviously, you know, had a little bit of research before and found out it didn't really go out the way he planned. But his sort of path and where he ended up and what he's doing now. It was really interesting. And he was such a lovely bloke. Honestly, couldn't speak highly enough of him as a person. Just really, really nice. So, thank you for reading. Anyone else who's read it, I very much appreciate that as well.
Well, I mean, you didn't really need me to, but I gave it a massive retweet yesterday. So I do hope a few people have read it. It's a really heartwarming story. So I urge you to go and read it. I mean, he's a bit of a blip on the health and the history of Chelsea in some respects, but it's well worth reading it. Anyway, we ought to really talk about the game that happened this week. It's the first time we've had an opportunity to do a bit of a review in the preview, if you see what I mean. And we had the Chelsea Zenit game, which of course I was unable to go to because I was still working at 7 o'clock down in Winchester, which is not really very conducive to going to Stamford Bridge in time for kickoff. But I know all you three boys were there. I mean, my view of it was very frustrating, really. And Zenit did a very good job in parking the bus. And Chelsea were, though, I think at the same time a bit off it. I mean, I have to say Mount had a very rare poor game, but our passing was all over the shop. But really, JK, and you'll have to unmute yourself because I muted you when I heard all that racket. So, thank God for Lukaku, old bean.
Well, I think in any other incarnation of the team over the last few years, it would have been 0-0 or even 1-0 to them without Lukaku, who provides that moment of excellence that we've been missing. And it was, I was intrigued to see somebody on Twitter say, Azpilicueta with one of his great crosses, his usual great crosses. And I was thinking he must be remembering Morata when Morata headed them in, because since then, I don't think we've ever seen a great Dave Cross playing when he plays wing back. That's been always been one of his problems, is his crossing has always been a bit iffy. This is why we were so keen on Reece James, but even Reece James had a very poor game. But they all had about five of them had poor games. Kovacic was completely outstanding. We're going to get onto that, obviously, as was the defence. But yeah, I think my slight worry, which I think I've voiced on Twitter a couple of times, is that the team get fixated with trying to hit the ball up to Lukaku, and it then loses an element of that play that they dealt with last year, creating chances, because we're not creating as many chances, I should say, just because of this desire to try and get him involved, because he is clearly an absolutely top striker. But he won them the game. So let's look at the positives. They were very, very well organised, Zenit, except they did have this. I was intrigued that they had a very large, how can I say it? They had a fat bloke playing centre forward in the first half, and then they brought on an even bigger bloke. I mean, quite an enormous kind of sort of, I don't know, a Yeti-like player came on for the second half. And I was intrigued. I thought, is he bigger than Rudiger? And he was, by about a foot, practically. So I thought, oh, it's purely a bloke who's going to put it about. And lo and behold, he missed a sitter, but then clattered into poor old Mendy, who had nothing to do with Eddie Mendy in the whole of the game. So I suspect that Kepa will be playing at the weekend as a consequence. But yeah, it was one of those games where, and it was all explained beautifully by Tuchel in the press conference, that he was happy with it. It's smoothing things out. It's people coming back. It's a bizarre pre-season. It's people just not playing as well as they have done. He didn't see a problem with it at all. He was very pleased in front of a very well-organised team, other than their strange ability just to boot the ball out the pitch and run after it, Zenit, who were fantastically organised. And the fact that we beat them is something I don't think we'd have done without Lukaku.
Yeah, so. I couldn't agree more with that. And I mean, as Adam will know, I've written a piece kind of looking back at the last week and the fact that we've not been playing particularly well, but have still managed to get results. And of course, that's down to our defence. And of course, Lukaku, he is making the difference. One thing that I was interested by, Dane, was the fact that, you know, we did. I mean, it's a funny thing, isn't it, parking the bus? Emotionally, I always feel very conflicted about parking the bus because I hate it when it happens to us. But, of course, we've been the beneficiaries of that on some rather important occasions. So I'm not going to criticise anybody for doing it. But I thought what was really clever about Zenit was the way that, you know, they didn't just have 10 men behind the ball, But they were really good at basically they had two or three men on Lukaku every available
opportunity. Absolutely right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They were on him, but they also cut out the supply from the width, you know, from the wing backs. They stood on them, which I thought was very smart. And of course, it made Chelsea do what we've seen them do in the past very ineffectually, which is to like do little 5-10 yard passes to each other in no man's land, you know, kind of about 30 yards out, which is not going to cause anybody any trouble. And it was really annoying. But I thought Tuchel kind of dealt with it quite well. I was kind of hoping, actually, mate, that he might think about playing two up top, but he didn't. He resisted that until kind of late on and basically just shouted at them to move the ball around quicker. And actually, I think that kind of worked in the second half.
Yeah, I was hoping he would have changed it up a little bit. You know, it's not, you don't go through the season with just the, you know, the first 11. You've got to keep players like Werner and Chilwell on board, you know. And I did say in our little WhatsApp group, I thought you would have started them both just to keep them keen, just to get that little bit between the teeth, because they're not getting a look in at the moment, rightly so, because Alonso's been brilliant. And
so he was poor. Luke. Alonso was very poor. And that was so back to Alonso before, wasn't it, Dane?
Think he looked tired. But even Lukaku, I thought he would have given Werner a chance and maybe put Lukaku on the bench just to keep them keen. Do you know what I mean? Because they've got a point to prove that they're used to both playing, and they haven't. Werner hasn't started this season, and Chilwell, for all the reasons that Tuchel has explained, has struggled personally. I think he probably would have liked to give him Chilwell longer, but you know we did struggle with Zenit. You know, they come with a game plan. They knew. I always thought if Chelsea scored, Zenit wouldn't change their game plan. You know, they know they're still in this group, and by coming to Chelsea and really setting up shop, you know, it could have been worse for them 3-4-0 if they would have gone for it. But that's a great result for them. And you're right, they really cut out the supply to Reece, who looked, you know, a little bit stuck for ideas. It went back to like sort of the Sarri-esque days where we were sort of doing that passing, like you said, around with not actually going anywhere. But when you actually look at the team, we've got three attacking players in that team, obviously out of the 10, we don't include the goalie. And Mount is not an all-out attacker. So we've got two attackers, and that is Ziyech and Lukaku. So, you know, if teams do a job on them, we are going to, you can see why we struggle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna come back to that, you know, when we talk about the Tottenham game, which means sadly Adam won't be with us, although he's always welcome to stay. He knows that, and he'll tell me in a minute, no doubt. But I think that's a really good point. And actually, it's a good segue too, Dane, because I was going to ask Adam two things, really. One, what is it about Ziyech? I mean, I had a bit of a go about him on Monday. I'm not convinced by him. I was surprised to see him start, not least because, you know, you've got Havertz, but also the Werner issue. So, I don't think he was very good again, to be honest. So there's that. But the other thing is, of course, you know, the presser today with Tuchel, he was asked quite a lot about this and the idea of you know, Chelsea playing badly, but, you know, his mitigations for that. So it'd be quite fun to hear what your thoughts are on Tuchel from today. But let's deal with Ziyech first.
Yeah, I was quite surprised he started, to be honest, given he didn't have a great game against Villa. And I do think the fact that Mount had a rare off day kind of took a lot of the heat off Ziyech, to be honest, because I do think there would have been a lot more of that had Mason played well. I don't think this system necessarily gets the best out of Ziyech, but from his form in pre-season, I was really hopeful we were going to see a sort of renewed vigour to his game. Obviously scored in the Super Cup, then got injured and just hasn't been able to recapture that sort of pre-season form, sadly. And yeah, it's Tuchel seems to still be trusting him more than he has Timo Werner, who obviously hasn't sort of started a game since Palace. I really thought Timo would start one of the last two games just because he actually had a decent goal-scoring international break with Germany where he got three in a row. And I thought that confidence might have just been important to roll up, try and keep it rolling. But yeah, it's an interesting one, and I'd be surprised now if Ziyech starts against Tottenham. Just to go back to the preview in terms of that, I imagine it'll be Mason, Kai Havertz and Lukaku for that. But in terms of Chelsea not playing well, yeah, I didn't think they were great against Villa. Didn't think they were great against Zenit. As JK said, Lukaku is the real difference. He's dragged Chelsea through those two games. And it's a bit strange because pre-international break, I thought Chelsea were playing quite well. Looked pretty well organised. Structure was good. Had a good attacking threat. And yeah, the international breaks seems to have knocked Chelsea off their game a little bit. But when you've got Lukaku up front now, you can play sort of a 5 out of 10 game, and either win 3-0 as they did against Villa, or you can overcome a pretty stubborn Zenit team. Just on Zenit, I half jokingly, half hoping, put out on Twitter at halftime that I thought Ruben might have actually had an impact in that game because of his ability to take the ball on in central areas and actually beat players. But I think I knew the reality that that was very, very unlikely to happen, even if he did get about 2 minutes at the end.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, wasn't it? Bringing him on literally on the 90th minute. And I wondered what that was all about. I mean, what do you think, Adam?
I think that was Tuchel knowing the game is won, knowing Ruben's around in the squad for the next 2 or 3 months and just giving a taste of match action to a player just to try and keep them feeling that they're involved and not just a complete spare part or a training mannequin. I think that's probably what that was. But it was strange that Tuchel's been talking all season, actually, about only having 3 subs in the Premier League. And he had 5 in the Champions League and he only used 3 anyway.
Well, indeed, that's a very good spot. I mean, I thought Tuchel made a very good point, actually. And, you know, I think, you know, we're not very good with reality checks as supporters, are we, to be honest? But, you know, I think it's clearly not clicked yet completely. You know, Lukaku's a new man. I mean, he's doing brilliantly, even though they haven't really clicked. And there are moments in the game where you can see that, where they're not quite finding him. When they're all on the same page, they will be. But I do think we've got a kind of a more structural issue with the formation and the personnel we've got. I think we've got some square pegs and round holes, and I've been whinnying on about this all season, saying we've got 4 or 5 wingers.
He has.
I have, because I've got a cob on about it, mate. You know me. I'm like a dog with a bone.
I do think you've got a fair point, though, in terms of last season under Tuchel, what made Chelsea very good, or very effective at least, was that front three was so mobile and interchangeable that it made it difficult for defences to pick up their men. Whereas with Romelu Lukaku, as good as he is, and the impact he's made has obviously been fantastic, Chelsea are a bit more structured in how they play with that attack, because he will sort of 9 times out of 10 be the guy leading the attack through the middle. You won't have Havertz popping up there and Mason then popping up, or Timo Werner. So I do agree that there is an element now to this where Chelsea are attacking in a bit more of a predictable way, perhaps. And obviously, it hasn't really hindered Lukaku because he scored 4 goals, which is as many as Timo's got all year at Chelsea.
Can I just say?
In 2021, anyway.
It's 1967 all over again.
I wasn't born, so
hey, I know you weren't. I'm just giving...
I was.
Yeah, but you were just... What were you?
I was probably talking more sense, actually, to be fair.
Well, than me. Yeah. No, I just wanted to throw that in just to prove that, you know, that I'm very old.
Why is it 67 again, then?
Well, because Doherty was playing a really interesting passing game, and they played Villa, and they beat Villa, I think it was 6-2, 6-3, up at Villa Park. The person who scored the goals was Tony Hatley. And for some godforsaken reason, he bought Tony Hatley. And it was soon revealed that Tony Hatley could only head the ball. And there wasn't much else going on, except he changed the way the team played. And they lumped the ball up the pitch to Hatley as much as they could. Whereas before, they'd had a very swift passing game with Tambling as the focus. And it changed the way they played. And he sold him immediately the following year. Not that he would ever, we would sell Lukaku, who's a different player because he's much better on the floor than Hatley was. But yet it's this aspect of making them more predictable. And I absolutely, I just feel that we created so many more chances because you never knew who was, it was a mobility to the side that we're losing at the moment. But he doesn't seem to be phased by it, as the presser was revealing today. He just said it's early days, we're working it out. And he's happy that they're winning. So, you know, we have faith in him.
You know what? Spot on, JK, because I mean, I know we like to have a grumble and a moan because we're all perfectionists, but that is the absolute reality. You know, I'll take a win over a performance any day of the week, because ultimately for me, that's what football's about. If I wanted performance over results, I'd support Spurs or Arsenal. You know, it's about winning, and we are. And I think, you know, Tuchel's probably chuckling to himself, saying, yeah, you know, this ain't working properly yet, but it will, and we've got more work to do. And in the meantime, my boys, the defence is so... I mean, it's like a brick wall. I mean, I tell you what. I mean, talk about form and how it's gelling and working. The defence have taken their last season's form straight into this season. It's been seamless, and they are unbelievably good. So he knows we're not going to concede many. And yet we're still winning. And the reason we're winning is we've spent 100 million quid on a striker who's doing exactly what we paid the money for. I mean, I'm happy bloody days. If I'm Tuchel, I'm having a great big Bavarian beer and smoking a cigar at the moment, thinking, no worries. You know, I'm kind of with him. Clearly, he wasn't doing that in the presser, although I would always recommend that anybody did. But he had some other interesting things to say, didn't he? Because obviously Spurs were playing in France last night in some Mickey Mouse tournament only for teams like Spurs. We've had 2 days more rest than them, which I would always presume is an advantage, but Tommy Tuchel validated that. And of course Kante's fit, but the question is, will he play, Adam, do you think?
I'm really not sure. Usually I'd say throw him straight in, but Kovacic has been playing well. Jorginho is very important, so I'm not as quick to throw Kante into the water as maybe I would have been previously. But if he is in the side, happy days. I'm not going to complain about it at all. The extra 2 days I think is actually really important, as Tuchel said, not necessarily because of fitness. I just think him having a couple of days to actually coach the players ahead of a game like this is going to be really important, and it wouldn't be a surprise, just going back to what we've been talking about, if Chelsea do look a bit more fluid on Sunday against Tottenham than they have done. Because obviously players came back from international break, had 1 day, played against Villa, then we had a couple of days, Zenit. So I do think Chelsea would probably be better for that. But yes, Kante's back, Pulisic isn't.
You know, we kind of expected Pulisic to still be out. They were saying a couple of weeks at the time, weren't they? But it's a really interesting conundrum, Dane, isn't it? Because, you know, normally, under normal circumstances, we wouldn't think twice about putting Kante in for either Jorginho or Kovacic. But Kovacic's form has been absolutely superb all season. I mean, particularly the last couple of games, but I mean, the Villa game, he was on fire. And I think Jorginho has even managed to command a greater, well, actually some respect would probably be a better way of putting it, rather than a greater respect from even me, because I think he's really, really, really improved recently. And I can see how fundamental he is to the way the team plays. But I can also see how Tuchel has actually mitigated his glaring, obvious weaknesses. So it's a hard call, actually, to break up that midfield on Sunday because of that, I think. But I can't even believe I'm saying that, but I think there might be some sense to that.
Kovacic has been brilliant. He was head and shoulders above everyone the other night, and has started the season really well. Jorginho is as important to Tuchel as he was to Sarri, but obviously, as you rightly said, Tuchel has sharpened his edges, has made him into a better player, I believe, and we believe that's why we're not saying with gritted teeth that he's actually become one of our most important players. We're saying it out of merit because of how impressive he is. The Kante, that is an interesting one. Obviously, he doesn't have to play against Villa in midweek, but we've got Man City next Saturday. So you could see if Tuchel would give him an hour. Can you take a risk? We've just given a player an hour away at Tottenham. Maybe he just keeps the kettle boiling and plays Jorginho and Kovacic, and he's got that security on the bench of Kante, who can come on and perform at the higher standards. I mean, he's got him in his thoughts to start next week against Man City.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. All will be revealed on Sunday. Jonathan?
I just wanted to say that there was a time, wasn't there, when Kovacic and Jorginho played together on the fan cast, where we'd go, oh no, please, can one of them not play? Please, can we just get rid of them, please?
Well,
and it's interesting how they've evolved into this wonderful combination.
But they've got better.
Due to the brilliance of the coach. Yeah. Without any shadow of a doubt. Absolutely.
Well, I agree with you. It is to the credit of Tuchel, because he's done it not just with those two, but a lot of the other players in the squad.
Indeed.
But I think you also got to give a bit of credit to the players too, because they're the ones on the pitch. They've made that substantive improvement. And I think if you look at Jorginho in particular, he's much more tenacious. You know, he's winning the ball a lot more. He's more physical. He's not getting bullied off the ball in the way that he used to. You can't do anything about his pace other than cover it, and I think that's what Tuchel's done. But he's not getting pushed over a lot. And it used to really piss us off, didn't it, when he'd go down like a sugar plum fairy?
Was that a mental thing because he was getting so much abuse from the fans?
Well, I don't know. Does that really affect them? I mean, you know, to be really blunt and perhaps a bit harsh here. If you're affected by that as a professional sportsman, you really shouldn't be a professional sportsman. You know, if I go to one of your gigs and heckle you, are you going to be bothered and mince off and not like it?
No, I'd walk off the stage and get in your face, Chidge.
Well, okay, that's you take the Eric Cantona approach. I applaud that.
I wouldn't do a double high kick because I'd do myself a mischief.
Well, fair enough. Listen, before we wrap up, I'm desperately wanting to ask Adam and pick his brains about this particular subject, which is Antonio Rudiger, who is being a bit, shall we say, reluctant to sign his contract. What's going on, Adam? Is he going to leave?
Potentially.
Mm.
Obviously, yeah, his contract expires at the end of this season. Chelsea are trying to renew him. The talks haven't really progressed for a little while. The thing, and you know, I can see both sides of this entirely. Rudiger has played out of his skin under Tuchel, has been absolutely phenomenal. I love that he is complete chaos on a football pitch a lot of the time, and as we saw on Tuesday night with that run forward, is completely hilarious as well at the same time. But he will be 29 at the end of this season. This will be his last big contract, and Chelsea don't tend to want players on big money into their 30s, beyond maybe 31, 32. Rudiger would like, say, from what I've been told, maybe a four-year deal, which would make him 33, and I don't think Chelsea are that keen to give him that length, particularly on the money he would like. So, yeah, Tuchel clearly wants him to stay from what he said today. He made that pretty clear with a caveat of saying, you know, it's not my decision, it's the club and Tony Rudiger's representatives to sort this out. So, yeah, I don't really have a firm answer of what's going to happen on that. We'll see come January, because come January, clubs abroad can discuss a pre-contract with him. And obviously, as a free agent, he then bags pretty much what would be the transfer fee. So from him, his perspective, it could be quite lucrative just to hold out and see what happens.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, Adam. I think he'll go, because I think the way that, you know, he wants more money, it's his last opportunity to get a big contract and a big payday. He's got no real allegiance to Chelsea. I mean, you know, whatever the players say, you know, he's you know, played for a lot of clubs, and I think he'll go. And I mean, you know, normally I mean, he's a great player, and I think he's been fantastic for us. But I mean, you know, one accepts it. Players come, players go, and ostensibly, I would have no problem. I would have less of a problem if I didn't. I mean, you know, I think Silva will go at the end of this season, so we're going to lose two really good defenders. And we've let some potentially very good ones go. Tomori, Gueye, to name but two. Which means we're going to have to... I mean, the thing is that, you know, OK, we can go and buy Kwande or whatever he's called and whoever else, but they still represent a risk. Because yeah, you don't know what you're getting until you see it, you know. And they could be brilliant. They could be an absolute flop. And I think, you know, I remember reading an article you wrote about this ages ago, one of you boys, it might well have been you, saying there is a massive risk here if we let some of these young kids go, that we could be really exposed in this summer. Mm. And I think maybe that's where it's going to end up.
Yeah, I think that was my piece. Obviously, we do have Levi Colwill, who is very highly rated by the club and has started very well at Huddersfield on loan. But he's only 18, so it might be a bit early for him to potentially jump into the first team squad next season. And as you say, I wrote a piece earlier this week about Rudiger, and I weighed it up and I thought, you know what, if Chelsea can get him on maybe a three-year deal with the option of a fourth, maybe that works for all parties and it protects Chelsea, because then they don't have to go out and spend 60 million on a defender who may not acclimatise to the Premier League. We know Rudiger has had his ups and downs, but on the left of this back three, and I guess this is the problem with Chelsea, is you can't guarantee that Tuchel will be around for the next 3 years to continue this back three. and then you go back to maybe a back four where we know maybe Rudiger's not as effective in a back four, and then it becomes very complicated. But I guess you have to try and work to what you are now. And as things stand, I don't think Chelsea could probably sign a better defender than Antonio Rudiger for the money it would probably cost to keep him.
Mm, interesting. Dane, you wanted to pop in?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Adam how highly rated the young Dutch player is. Xavier, I don't want to butcher his name. I know he came with a big reputation and then had a horrible injury. But obviously you mentioned Levi, and I just wondered how highly rated he was as well, young Dutch defender.
Yeah, Mbeyamba.
Thank you.
It's okay. Yeah, no, he obviously had arrived with a big reputation. He came from Barcelona. He only spent a year there, though, and was very much labelled the next Virgil van Dijk because he's a centre-back and Dutch. Yeah, he did his knee, I think, in his second training session at Chelsea and then missed most of last season. He's definitely got a potential. I think from what I can gather, he's going to do the first sort of half of this season with the 23s and then see where things go in January in terms of maybe a loan move. But left-footed centre-back could play on the left of a back three easily. It will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see next Wednesday against Villa if he's involved in the squad in some capacity. I think that might be quite telling if he is.
Right, has he been playing for the under-23s?
Yeah, he started a bit later pre-season. So he's been eased in, but he did train with the first team squad during the international break. So maybe he'll be involved in some capacity against Villa. And if he is, maybe we can lean a bit more as to where Tuchel maybe thinks he is. And if he plays, maybe sort of where he is at the moment in terms of his development. But one to keep an eye on. But for me, I think Levi is ahead at the moment. I think Levi can be absolutely brilliant if he is allowed to sort of develop in sort of same fashion he has done in the academy.
Mm. Well, all will be revealed, no doubt. I think it's a difficult one, though. It really, really is. But there you go. Adam, as always, delightful to see you. I mean, you're welcome to stay, but I wouldn't make that presumption. Are you staying or going?
I have got an evening with the wife, so
yeah.
As much as I would love to stick around and talk Chelsea,
well, I never like want you to feel that you weren't welcome. So I will always make the offer.
Always appreciate that.
Yeah, I totally understand. So as always, brilliant to see you. Okay, because you weren't at the presser today, so there's no sneaky little embargo that you can tease us with, is there?
I believe there's some interesting stuff on Havertz coming out tonight.
Okay.
Oh no.
It's positive stuff. Good.
I did that deliberately so you could say that. Good.
Right. Yeah, lovely. Okay, well, we'll look out for that. And I bunged you my piece earlier on, which actually picks up on the theme that we talked about earlier about, I'll tell you later because it probably fits much better with part three. But Adam knows what it is. There's no embargo on mine. I'm not important enough to be embargoed. I mean, maybe I should personally be embargoed. I mean, many people might think that, but certainly my writing.
No, Chidge, no.
Oh, there you go. See, it works. You see, there we go. Adam, as always, lovely to see you, and no doubt we will see you very, very soon. I look forward to that.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the weekend and hopefully a win on Sunday.
Absolutely. It's a must win, as we will be talking about in a minute, because we're going to do the opposition view next with an old friend of ours from the Love Sport days. We do have the occasional Spurs friend, he says, through gritted teeth. But in a minute, we're going to be speaking to Ricky Sachs from Last Word on Spurs. We'll see you in a sec.
Cheech.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live, it's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep. NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow. Great. I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Jidge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com.
Welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast. I am, of course, Stamford Chidge, and down there on my left-hand corner is the wonderful Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Lovely to be on the show, Chidge. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure, mate. And we've got the lovely Dane Whittle again with us this Friday. Hello, Dane.
Evening.
Now, I could be wrong, Dane, but I'm liking that shirt because I have a suspicion that that is the shirt that Chelsea was wearing when we went up to the lane and we won 4-1. Kerry scored a brilliant goal. And there were supposed to be no Chelsea fans
there. We wasn't in there, really, I promise.
I know, because they were rebuilding bits of it. But we'll talk about...
We weren't there. I was there.
Yeah. But, we weren't there, really, honestly.
I no, wasn't
we
there, really. But, officer.
Knowing Dane, he's worn that shirt deliberately. But anyway, there's a good reason we're talking about that, because in a minute, we'll be talking to a certain person after this.
The Opposition View.
That's right, we've got Opposition View, and this week it's our old chum from the good old Love Sport days, Mr. Ricky Sacks from Last Word on Spurs. How are you, mate?
Chidge, that was the good old days. Oh, those were the good old days. I remember those days. Champions League football rolling in on a Tuesday and Wednesday. And don't ask me what I'm doing on a Thursday right now, because it's not as exciting as what you're doing, I believe me or not.
Well, I know. A lot of water has gone under the bridge since those days. Although, of course, we saw you last season, as it's always lovely to get you on the show when we do an Opposition View. First question for you, really, is you know, you got rid of the busted flush that is Jose Mourinho, and then there was this massive saga, really, wasn't there, all summer about who you were trying to get, who was saying yes, who was saying no, and you've ended up with Nuno Espirito Santo, who, I'll be honest with you, Ricky, is a manager that I rate pretty highly. Actually, I think he's a decent manager. But how did you feel about the appointment? And more to the point, actually, mate, to kind of get two questions in one. You know, what do you feel about him in terms of, is it the right, is he going to get you playing the right kind of, because I mean, I've got a lot of Spurs mates, and they're all about, we got to play a certain way. Nuno's a defensive manager, mate, so.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just to kind of reflect on the 72-day saga for a manager, it was just quite chaotic. At one point, I thought I might be getting the call, or you might be getting the call, or the boys in the studio might be getting the call. It was just such a bizarre set of circumstances, really. It was almost as if it was going to go to anyone. In the end, obviously, Nuno got the role. I don't think you can believe his luck, really. He's the guy that actually just left Wolves by mutual consent and got offered the job at Tottenham. And now, regardless of what, obviously, everyone makes of Tottenham, the preconceptions, it's a club that's in London. They've got arguably one of the best stadiums in the world, one of the best training grounds in the world. Haven't got a too bad a squad, to be honest with you. Again, we're going to argue in terms of the squad. Definitely did investment, of course, hence the, obviously, the reason why Mourinho never quite worked out for him and Pochettino as well. But in terms of the appointment of Nuno, I think the problem is I got to that point where it was almost like, OK, I mean, I'll just accept anyone now, because you just felt, where is this going? And I'll be honest with you, I'm the same as you. I was very, very impressed with Nuno during his first two seasons in the Premier League with Wolves. I think they had arguably the best defence outside of both Chelsea and I think Liverpool at the time, or it might have been City and Liverpool. And what impressed me was his organisation and structure of the team. Made some decent signings, as you saw, obviously massively helped by his agent, of course, Jorge Mendes, that obviously enabled him to get the likes of Ruben Neves through the door, Jimenez as well. Of course, Moutinho, how Spurs, we wanted that player so badly. Got it, I think, in 2011 with ABB in charge. Never quite worked out. So, I mean, looking at the reflection of it, I mean, I was quite, after what happened in the summer, and after, obviously, the dismissal of Mourinho and having Ryan Mason in there, I liked, you know, for the man he was, the approach of him and the honourable man that he is. At the start of the season, great result against City, where we had the Harry Kane saga, of course, that was rumbling on. You know, a real smash-and-grab win at Wolves. We had a hard-fought 1-0 win at home to Watford. And then, obviously, just last week, we had quite a horrendous display against Crystal Palace. And I think the problem you have with that is that It was so utterly horrendous, where we've been here so many times before. When I look at previous managers under Pochettino, Mourinho, where you can see a game is getting away and you guys have been there before and you think, well, change it, do something to affect it. It's Crystal Palace, we're losing 1-0. What can be worse than at least having a go and changing it? And he didn't change it. And he didn't even look to adjust the formation. And we ended up losing that 3-0. And suddenly, what looked like a really good start, where all these narrow wins were showing the team of that grit, determination, you then start to go back and question, well, hold on, were we actually lucky in those wins? And now I'm at a situation where, on the back of that performance on Thursday in Europa Conference League, where I really, really, really want this to work with Nuno. I really want it to work with him. But I'm not quite sure if it will, Chidge. And yeah, I mean, it is very, very early days. I'm not sitting here being knee-jerk and calling for his head already, even though many Spurs fans are, but that's us Spurs fans already.
Well,
to
be
fair,
any fans, I think, really, Ricky, yeah, to be fair.
Yeah. But I mean, like I say, I think the problem, as you know, and you guys know as well, when you have Benitez in charge to some degree, is that when there's a negative brand of football and it's negative results, it is very hard to be patient. With Pochettino, because it was a positive, expansive brand of football, and sometimes you wasn't getting the results, but you could see what they were trying to do. You were willing to wait. You were willing to give it time. But what I fear for Nuno is, on the back of Mourinho's spell, where towards the end, it was very hard to watch, that he's coming off the back now of a manager where he's got to come in and he has got to be a bit more expansive and a bit more free-flowing to just get the fans to enjoy football again. So if we're not enjoying the football and we're not enjoying the results, then I do think he's going to be up against it very, very early. But having said that, we're playing against the Chelsea side that I know you were going to bring it on to this at the weekend, that are, quite frankly, a different animal now with Lukaku up top. And yeah, I know we're going to come on to it. I don't want to steal your headlines and what you're going to say. But yeah, we're going to be in for a very, very tough game on Sunday. Very tough game indeed.
Yes, indeed.
Ricky, sorry, can I just say, Ricky, were they poor during the week on Thursday? Were they poor, did you think?
Do you know what, John? It's always very hard to say, are they very poor? I mean, they make 7 or 8 changes. So, you know, when you make that amount of changes, any team's going to lose its fluidity. Any team's going to lose its rhythm and balance. I mean, I just think, having looked at the opposition we played, Stade Rennais, I mean, to be fair, I'm laughing about it being Europa Conference League. It's actually a Europa League group, I would say. Some really good teams in there. Stade Rennais were playing Champions League football this time last season.
We played them last season, didn't we? Mm. We only beat them 1-0. We played them last season. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're not a bad side. And to be fair, you'd probably argue that 2-2 away from home at, you know, one of the teams that are arguably favoured to go quite far in the competition isn't a bad result. If I'm being honest with you, Jonathan, it is. I just think it's the decline of Tottenham, where we was in a Champions League final, you know, not too long ago. I know it feels like a long time to fans, but it wasn't that long ago. And to decline from Champions League to Europa League to then Europa Conference League is very, very hard to take. And then you put all into it, obviously, you're losing Pochettino. And yeah, just the style of football, it feels just like we've gone through a whirlwind over the last couple of years. And we haven't quite come to terms with it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's, you know, football's like that. It can be a real roller coaster. But yeah, I get your point. And thanks for being so honest about it as well, Ricky. I mean, there's the other thing that's kind of really tied in with all of this. I know you just mentioned Lukaku, but of course your talisman for a long time now has been Harry Kane. And it, you know, there was a lot. I mean, you know, that was the headline of the summer and the transfer window, wasn't it? Was he going to go to City? Was he going to throw his toys out of the pram? I mean, he stayed, so I'm presuming you're really happy he stayed. But are you happy with the disruption it's caused?
Do you know, it's funny, Chiz. Am I happy he stayed? I mean, I'm happy he stayed if it's a committed Harry Kane. I'll be honest with you. The performance I saw from Crystal Palace, and I know it's only one performance, I know it's only 90 minutes, and you mustn't, you know, go too into analytically looking at it, but there's just something that isn't the same at the moment. And whether that changes in time this season remains to be seen. I mean, let's be honest about it. The reason why Harry Kane didn't get the move is because City didn't pay the money. It wasn't because Harry Kane wanted to stay at Tottenham. Harry Kane would have gone if it was the money. I think we have to keep remembering that as Spurs fans. Oh, we're delighted he stayed, but we're only, you know, he's only staying at Tottenham because Daniel Levy didn't waver at 100 million or 115 million. So we've got to remember that. He wanted to go. He would still want to go. If the window was open now, he'd still want to leave Tottenham. I think fans can't delude themselves with that. And yeah, Harry Kane, wonderful striker. I'm sure get many goals for Tottenham this season. But yeah, I mean, let's be honest about it. Harry Kane doesn't want to be playing on Thursday night. Same way as fans, we don't want to be playing UEFA Conference League football on Thursday night. So it's a difficult situation. I mean, I think with some fans, you know, they've reached a point where they understand he wants to go, but it's the way he handled it was appalling, really, guys.
So, has it soured the relationship between him and the fans then, do you think?
Well, it's... I'm only talking as a Spurs fan, that for me, I obviously see him in a bit of a different light, and because you've no longer got that player there that actually wants to play for the football club. And I don't mean it disrespectfully. I mean, Harry, of course, when he puts on the shirt, I'm sure he will give it his all to some degree. But he did want to leave, and he does still want to leave. You know, he's only staying at Tottenham because he did not get the move because it wasn't financial reasons. That's the only reason why. So to say I'm delighted he's happy and he's staying, listen, as long as he wants to be here, then I'm happy for him to stay here. But, you know, on the evidence of what I've seen so far this season, you know, he hasn't scored yet in the Premier League. And I know he always has a quiet start to August in general. I think there's still a lot of making up to do with fans, to be honest with you. For me personally, I know we're going to come on to it. I think Son's the bigger loss than Kane at the moment in terms of the Spurs team. I think Son's rise over the last 12 to 18 months has been massive for the football club. Absolutely massive.
I think Son is a wonderful player, Ricky. Mm. Absolutely.
I'm amazed, Jonathan. I'm amazed that Son committed his future to Tottenham in the most balmiest summer where we're looking for a manager, and Son still feels Tottenham's right for him. But as I've said before, Spurs are an attractive proposition still because they are based in London. They can still pay decent wages. They have offered some form of European football. But for me, Son, if I was Heung-min Son, and I come on your show being honest, right, guys? Yeah. If I'm Heung-min Son, I want to be playing at one of the clubs that can offer me Champions League football, that I can win trophies. And it's ironic that when Son signed that new contract, all of his South Korean band that followed him around the world was so disappointing because there's almost an acceptance that he won't win trophies.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point. And I was going to kind of ask you about what your expectations of the season are. I kind of am. But, I mean, I think the Premier League's got a bit weird again, as it tends to do. And I think the top four is looking like another closed shop again. And we all know why. It's about resources and money. So there's us, Liverpool, United and City, I would say, would be most people's top four. But then I think the problem for Spurs, I mean, I've got a really good Arsenal, in fact, she's my boss, and I was talking to her about Arsenal. We always talk about football, never what we're supposed to be talking about, bless her. And obviously she's got a bit of an interest in the game on Sunday. But she's obviously absolutely spitting feathers at the moment because of how awful Arsenal are. But what she was saying was it's really kind of weird in the Premier League because you've now got teams like you know, West Ham, for example, who've really, really improved. Leicester have really, really improved. So it's making it a lot more difficult. You've got that maybe four or five teams under the top four. And so you could either finish fifth with and like go, cool, we were really close to getting fourth, or you could be eighth or ninth or tenth, you know.
Yep.
And is that kind of where you I mean, are you worried about that? Is that where you think you are?
Well, I just look at Chelsea this season, and to be fair, I've been impressed with Tuchel since the minute he walked into the job, won the Champions League, signed Lukaku. I think Chelsea at the moment are probably my favourites for the title. I just think, you know, him as a manager, last season I just saw some of the tactical masterclasses he done. I suppose the question is, can he do it over the course of 38 like Klopp and Guardiola have done? That's maybe a question that remains to be seen, but I think he's good enough to do that. I think he's a very good manager. I think the players are buying into him. And, you know, it's funny, isn't it? You know, people at the time, again, it's sentimental fans thinking, oh, you know, was there a need to change Lampard? Where was it going? But to be fair, you know, he's walked through the door and he's done so well and really improved the players from a coaching aspect. I think they have got massive beliefs in what he's trying to do. They can see a vision. They can see a pathway, a plan, a philosophy. And, yeah, just on your point with Tottenham, I just at the moment, for me, I look at it and think, well, Chelsea are better than us. They're going to improve. Liverpool with Klopp there, I think it's going to be very hard to see Liverpool not in the top four despite nearly a pig's ear they made of it last season. City have got Guardiola. Obviously, they've just spent a huge amount of money in Grealish. I think even with City not getting Harry Kane, looking at the goals they've scored already without him. So it's not that they're desperately missing him at the moment. And yeah, I mean, like I say, I think the United getting Ronaldo, for me personally, when you've got the likes of Fernandes there, and however tactically inept Solskjaer is, I think they'll still get to top four based on the players, guys, if I'm being honest with you. So... Yeah. Once those four positions have been eaten up, I think you look at Tottenham now, and realistically, I mean, fifth and sixth is probably where they're likely to finish. But like you've just said there, you know, Leicester improving, West Ham are improving, Everton now with Benitez, they're unbeaten at the moment. And again, Nuno, to be fair, Nuno's managed Wolves. It's a different kettle of fish managing Tottenham. You know, regardless of where Tottenham are as a club, I'd like to think, even though we've had such a decline, Spurs are a bit of a bigger club than Wolves. And my worry is, you know, is the job going to be too big for him? So I totally agree with you, Chidge. Spurs could finish anywhere between fifth and ninth, and nothing would really surprise me. And this season, again, nothing would surprise me if Spurs do make a change during the season, if it isn't working with Nuno, because he clearly wasn't Daniel Levy's first choice, although we saw the way Spurs flirted with Conte and whatever. And I just think with Daniel now and the way it's played out with the board, and I suppose you had your also thoughts on how the ESL was approached in the summer, I think the stock of the current Tottenham board is at its lowest point it's ever been. And therefore, if there is a bad start with Nuno and we do not get the results over the course of the next 6-7 weeks, nothing surprises me in football. We saw, you know, Ranieri get sacked on the back of winning a title with Leicester. You know, we've seen changes in the past where Chelsea managers have gone and won trophies. So in this game now, you are purely judged on results over the course of 7 or 8 weeks. If you don't get them, you're under pressure. So Nuno, you know, like anything, it's Chelsea at home, although Spurs probably, between the two sides, Spurs aren't expected to win. But we wouldn't expect the performance. I think that's key. I think we just want to see Spurs play on the front foot. I don't know why that's too much to ask. When you're at home, you've got nearly 60,000 fans in that stadium behind you. A Chelsea side that, of course, they're favourites for the title and, you know, they've got some wonderful players. But I just want to see Spurs, you know, go toe-to-toe with them and not sit back. I just don't think sitting back at Chelsea is going to do us any favours either, to be honest.
JK. The trouble is that's his style, isn't it? That's been his style with Wolves, is sitting back. I mean, I'm just wondering, even if you had some decent results or a few draws, if the fans were watching a very defensive manager indeed, would that be go against your philosophy? And therefore you say, look, I don't care that he's doing okay. We need a manager who plays in the Spurs tradition and wins that way, because that is, you know, that's ingrained in the club's philosophy for me, that you are an entertaining side, you know, and you have been with Kane and you have been under Pochettino. You were all right. You gave a few results away, but he seemed to be a better mix for me than either Mourinho or even let's see that the current manager would be, just because of his, you know, he came to Chelsea a few years ago and played exactly the way that Zenit played during the week. And they broke away and scored a goal. And that was just because Wolves got given a lot of plaudits for that, because they were Wolves. I really don't think you'll be happy seeing him park the bus. Well,
they've
just
done it before, JK. That's where the expression came from in 2004.
It's true. It is. That's true. Yeah, under Maria, that's true, actually. But that was 17 years ago, though, Chich. Let's be.
It feels like yesterday.
It does. It does. Yes.
Guys, I mean, just to pick up on that point there from Jonathan, if I can, for 1 second. I think Jonathan, you know, there's certain Spurs fans out there that would rather lose 5-4 and be entertained by the football than win 1-0. And, you know, this is the thing with Tottenham. I know it sounds bizarre. Spurs supporting Tottenham. It's not. I mean, if supporting Spurs was about the trophies, you wouldn't be a Tottenham fan, because we don't get trophies. So the element of supporting Tottenham is about, you know, front foot football, buying into philosophy, buying into a vision where there is a vibrancy of attacking football. And, you know, we've gone through, 18 months of Mourinho where, let's be honest, you know, if you don't get the trophies, then it is very hard to watch. And that's what we found as fans. And therefore now, I just think we want to get back to a point, guys, where we just want to enjoy the football. And I'm just not quite sure, although we made such a great start, Nuno, in terms of results, I'm not too sure over the course of this season whether Nuno is going to play that brand of football that is going to excite the fans. And what I will say again is I really like him. Honourable guy. Seems very, very nice. Very placid. Don't get much out of his press conferences. They are quite dull. But again, I think at the moment the jury is massively out and it remains to be convinced. But, you know, if he gets a result of the weekend against Chelsea, suddenly it all changes again. That's football.
Yeah, he'll be the messiah if you beat us on Sunday, mate. I mean, you've already acknowledged it's going to be a tough ask given where both clubs are at the moment. And, of course, it's compounded for you because, I mean, you've got an incredible amount of injuries and all sorts of madness going on. I mean, I tell you what, I mean, I could run through the entire list, but it would probably take me another half an hour, Ricky. But tell me who you're more likely to be able to start, because you're probably more on top of who's actually now fit, well, who might have been injured.
Yeah. That's even really tough to answer, Chidge. I mean, Son, Bergwijn, Lucas, they're currently touch and go. Sanchez, Romero, Lo Celso, they come back a day before from Croatia, the game. And there's an argument at the moment that whether do you actually play, even though they've been training independently alone, do you play Sanchez and Romero on the basis that they would have worked together for a week as a duo, but then they wouldn't have had a week's training together with the team? It's just really ironic. So to be honest with you, out of the players I've told you, it's very hard to judge it. I mean, I would think if Son is anywhere near fit, Son has to play. As I said to you earlier, I mean, for me, Son Son is a bigger loss to me than what Harry Kane is at the moment, because I think Kane now relies on Son. That's how much, you know, this Tottenham team has changed. Son is actually so important to this Tottenham team, the way they tick, and Son can produce a moment out of nothing. And Son has shown himself to actually be the man to step up in these bigger games than Harry Kane. And I'm not just saying that to Harry because of what's happened in the summer, but there is that general feeling now that Son actually loves being the main man. So to answer your question, probably Son, Bergwijn, I would imagine may pull through and may play, and Lucas Moura as well. I'm not too sure on the Argentinian lads, purely because they haven't really had a chance to work with the squad. And they've been out of the team pitch now for the last, 10, 12 days. And Ndombele, for me, has to start. I think, obviously, he played on Thursday. Just for Spurs to have any kind of creativity, and Ndombele has to play. I mean, if we're going to Chelsea at home with three defensive mids, then I'll be honest, guys, I feel fearful to turn the TV on.
Dane, you wanted to pop in?
Yeah, it's just something that Ricky mentioned a while back, although I'm really loving his passion and the talk. You know, the good thing about these opposition views, Chidge, is, you know, it's just different colours, but they're exactly the same of us. The ones I've experienced, and it's so refreshing because Twitter makes a rival supporters such a bad name. So I love Ricky. I mean, you know,
you could say the same about, you know, just with us lot on Chelsea. You don't need opposition fans. There's enough opposition amongst Chelsea fans on Twitter, mate.
Yeah. I was just wondering if Ricky, like most of us, most of the time, is being a bit naive with Nuno, because Jonathan said, oh, we know his style, but do we? What was he like at Porto? If you think the much travel to
and Valencia as well, Dane, I agree with you. And Valencia as well, you're right, he did play.
I don't know if he played attacking football. All I'm going on is what Tony Pulis said years ago. He said, do you think I'd play this style of football if I was manager of Arsenal? He said, I adapt to my surroundings and the players I have. So it's just wondering if Nuno has clearly gotten what he was like at Porto would have been interesting.
Yeah, it's a great point, Dane. All I would say on that is that for me, with the calibre of players that he's got there that he's working with at the moment, you know, I think it would suit a more expansive brand of football based on the current players that he's got there. I think he would get more out of them by, you know, removing the shackles. And I think you're right. Maybe I'm being quite naive. We've just come off the back of a really, really poor result at Crystal Palace.
It's not a dig, Ricky. You know, we've got no. We're being a little bit, you know, questioning his formation to certain extents because we're not attacking enough.
You know what? I'll be honest, Danger. This is how fickle I am. Three games in, I didn't really see much of a problem. But I've got friends calling me up saying to me, yeah, but hold on, Rick, you know, three games in, all right, great wins. But you know, what about the possession? What about the style? And I said, but don't worry about that, we're getting the points. But it is like anything. The minute you don't get the points and you start judging a football that's negative, it can't help but eat away at you a little bit. So like I said, I really, really want it to work. I trust Nuno when he says that for him. We haven't yet seen the finished article. And you're right, Dane. We're three or four games in. We have got to give it time. As much as impatient as Spurs fans we are, I mean, listen, we have been very patient when you think about how long we've been waiting for a trophy. We can't wait any much more longer in terms of patience for that. So, like I say, we've got to give Nuno time. Of course, we want to see it work. He seems like a really nice guy. And yeah, I mean, I know Mourinho says nice guys don't win. Well, I hope this one is a bit different. And we do. So we'll have to wait and see.
You will indeed. Now, how do you think it's going to pan out on Sunday? I mean, you know, it is going to be interesting because, you know, you just come off the... I mean, to be fair, Ricky, I mean, I watched a lot of that match before the Chelsea game last weekend. And, I mean, you know, to be fair, I was watching with a different pair of glasses on than you. But, I mean, you did get a sending off. That didn't help. And, you know, two good goals by that new bloke who's named Edouard something.
Edouard.
Edouard.
So, you know, it's a bit like us. I mean, we beat Villa 3-0, but they were better than us on the day. So, you know, we can get these results. So it's going to be interesting to see whether Nuno goes into this match thinking, well, we just come off the back of a 3-0 against a team we really expected to beat. Now we've got the champions of Europe turning up. What do I do? Do I just make sure we don't get whooped, or do I do what Ricky is advising me to do and take it, you know, take it to us? And I think the other thing is, Ricky, I mean, Villa took it to us. And on another day, they'd have won that match.
I mean, to answer your point there, I mean, I think it'd be suicidal to go to Chelsea with all that attack. I wouldn't be suggesting that's a Nuno. So, just to kind of put that point clear. I mean, I just think also it's trying to find that balance, dude. You know what it's like? I mean, again, if we play 11 men behind the ball, that's not going to work either. It is finding that balance. It is, you know, really relying on moments of brilliance. That's the way I see Tottenham winning this game. They're not going to win, I don't think, the individual battles, because Chelsea overall are a better team. So what Spurs have to do, they have to take their moments. And, you know, regardless of a 90-minute match, you will always get moments. And it's about taking one of those moments. And it's about key players stepping up. Fingers crossed Sonny's fit. Hummingson, Dele Alli, Steven Bergwijn, Lucas Moura, Brian Hill, if he plays, or Tsungi Ndombele. It's about one of those players stepping up and taking a moment. But, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm not confident at all going into the game. If you offer me 1-1 right now, I would bite your arm off for it.
Are you going to go with 1-1 for your prediction then?
Yeah, I as much as I love you, Chidra, I can't come on to here and predict the Tottenham defeat. I mean, that would just be completely wrong of me to do so. Yeah,
Nor should you. I would never do that. We never. I mean, Ricky, it's so
we
bad.
We never do ever.
Yeah, we've got a well, apart from doing it on the show, we never predict a defeat. But we've also now got this predictions league that we've joined. And it's all Chelsea people who listen to the show, right? And you get points if you get it the result absolutely spot on. But none of us can predict Chelsea doing anything other than winning. So if we lose, loads of points. So I totally get where you're coming from. So what, we're going to say 1-1, are we? Is that what you're going to go with?
We're going to say 1-1. We're going to say that Lukaku is going to score first and we're going to have it cancelled out by Hummingson, who grabs Spurs a great battling point against title chasing Chelsea. There you go. I've written the headline for you already, guys.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ricky, I was going to say earlier on, I'm old enough to remember when our football was pretty turgid and we never won anything. And we used to have an expression in those days, and I don't know if this is unique to Chelsea, but we used to say, football is a great day out, ruined by the 90 minutes of football.
Indeed. Well, I'm taking my old man with me at the weekend, so I've said to him, we're going to enjoy everything apart from the kickoff onwards. So he's already briefed for it.
That's what the pubs are for, Ricky, in my experience.
Exactly.
So there you go.
Exactly. There and after.
Indeed. Look, Ricky, lovely to see you. It'd be great to catch up with a pint you sometime, not too distant. But enjoy your week. Enjoy tomorrow at the wedding, obviously. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. My
really
pleasure.
Appreciate
no problem
it.
At all.
Yeah, and I can't wish you good luck for Sunday, but I hope you don't endure too much pain this season. How about that? It's about as good as I can get.
Coming from you, I will take that. Thank you so much, boys.
Fair enough.
Keep well, keep safe.
You too, mate. Lovely to see you. Take care, mate.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
You too. Take care.
Well done.
Brilliant there. There's the wonderful Ricky Sachs, who is the main man behind the Last Word on Spurs show, which, whoever you support, what Ricky's done with that podcast is absolutely phenomenal in terms of its growth and the number of people who listen to it.
Well,
and he was great. He was great on Love Sport as well. And we remember him fondly from that too. So there we go. So well done. And we'll be back in a minute after a very quick break. And we'll be talking about our preview of the Spurs v Chelsea match.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast, the Friday night preview show with me, Stamford Chidge, Sir Stamford of Chidge, and down below, the Right Honourable Jonathan Kidd.
So you're Sir Stamford, are you?
I am.
And I'm just the Right Honourable.
Yeah, because Stamford's much more of a kind of, heraldic name, really, isn't it?
Could I not be Sir Jonathan?
No. I've never heard of a Sir Jonathan at all, ever. Was there a Jonathan at the Knights of the Round Table? No. No, exactly.
Different.
I rest my case.
Was there a situation? No.
No, exactly. So it's good to see you, mate. I mean, I'm kind of trying to recover from having Ricky on the show. He's always got bags of energy, that young man. But
he's great. Fantastic.
He was so honest about Spurs. Yeah. It was great. Yeah. No delusion there at all, mate.
It would be difficult to be otherwise, wouldn't it, really?
I feel that it's quite interesting talking to Ricky. And, I mean, Dane, I know. And, by the way, we've got Dane Whittle on the show too. Hello, Dane. Sorry about that. We got embroiled in nattering.
Oh, yeah, Ricky was top draw. If he didn't have a podcast talking about Tottenham, I'd actually listen to it.
No, he's a smart bloke, actually. I used to do a show with him, and he was always great fun to do that show with. But I tell you what, boys, what was interesting is that when we're sitting here as champions of Europe, you can almost smell the intimidation that gives out to opposition fans, particularly to rivals like Tottenham. They know they haven't got a leg to stand on with whatever they say. It's a beautiful place to sit, isn't it? Isn't it lovely?
No, they'll try and make out that we're the worst winners ever. That appears to be the character.
Well, the City fans are doing that.
They're trying to start a rivalry, aren't they? That's so annoying. Yeah.
But City fans are doing that until I saw it on Twitter, and one of the City fans said, have you actually worked out what you're saying? If they're the worst winners of the Champions League of all time, what does that make us who lost to them in the Champions League final?
In the final, absolutely.
Indeed. Anyway,
worst lose.
Rubbish.
We're not talking about the Champions League right now. We are now talking about Spurs versus Chelsea at this weekend, which, you know, I don't need to tell anybody who listens to this show is, you know, we have bigger matches. I think there's no doubt of that. Against bigger teams with bigger glory at stake. But if you ask any Chelsea fan before the start of the season, what's the two most important games to win all season? They'll tell you Spurs away and Spurs at home. It's just like that. Well, I know, mate, it really is. A lot of them will say that.
Well, not for me, though.
A lot of them under the age of 75 will say that. Oh, sorry, 60, 65.
Well said. No, well said. Absolutely correct. Yes,
because I know you still hate dirty Leeds, but
I do. I played cricket on Wednesday, and I'm now older than 75.
But I do take your point. I mean, I still think I'm right, but I do take your point. But I have to say, Jake, I wonder if because in a way, we have other rivalries that you could argue, you know, are really important. You could also argue, you know, Liverpool, United, you could even go into the continent now and the rival we have with Barcelona. And of course, you could also argue that one of the old reasons for the antipathy towards Spurs, other than the 66-7 FA Cup, is this idea when fans were more local, you know, when Chelsea fans lived in the area, when Spurs fans lived in the area, or it was a London thing, you ended up being at school with people who supported Spurs and Chelsea, and it was just a nightmare if you lost to them. So, but I think that's gone as well, because it's such a global game now. And yet, the rivalry persists. And as I said, you could go and ask 10 Chelsea fans, proper Chelsea fans tomorrow, and 9 of them will say, we've got to beat Spurs. And I wonder if that has something to do. I mean, in a way it does for me, actually, but that amazing record we had against them when we just never, ever lost was just like such a thing to, you know, whenever you had a tough time as a supporter or we'd played a bit shit or we'd got beaten by somebody, we always had that. It was like, well, whatever happens, we'll beat Spurs. You know, there's something wonderfully comforting about that. And then, of course, it went, as all records do. So I don't know why. It's kind of made it important for me to always beat them again.
I think part of the reason was they were worse than us on many of those occasions. Oh, they were left down.
Not all the time.
No, in some occasions they weren't. No. But we always seem to. It's a London derby. I think even Tuchel made reference to that today. He seems very, very on the ball, Tuchel, about all the significance of these games. And he said, it's a London derby. Who knows? We have to be at our best. Doesn't really matter how many injuries they've got or what their recent results have been. Everybody raises their game and there'll be 60,000 there, and he was absolutely right. So that there's that aspect to it. But yes, I'm hoping that Alonso will score as well, as he has frequently in the past against them. He scored some cracking goals against them, has Alonso. Mm. So bring it on, as far as I can say.
Well, indeed. I mean, let's talking of Alonso, let's talk about the likely team. I've done my usual thing. It's gonna you know, drive you up the wall this year, because I found this bloody app, which means I can fanny about doing a selection. So this is what I have gone for, and you'll not be amazed, JK, that it is remarkably similar to most teams, so therefore I can guarantee you that it will be wrong. But we've got Mondi, because I think Mondi will be fit to play. Rudiger, Silva, Azpilicueta, although I think it could be Christensen or Silva. I'm not sure which. I've gone for Silva. If there's any match you have to pick Alonso for, it is against Spurs. They hate him, and he always produces against them. So, I mean, even if he looked a bit tired and leggy against Zenit, Tuchel's got to be cognizant of that fact, and he's got to pick Alonso in my book. I've gone for Kante. I think, you know, big match, you got to pick Kante. So I've gone Jorginho, Kante, and James as a right wing back. And this is where it gets interesting up front, because obviously Lukaku starts. Mount, I think, of course, starts. And I've gone for Havertz. But I think, you know, I think the interest, because we don't know how Nuno is going to play this. You know, he, and I think, you know, and I'm going to get onto this in a minute, but you know, I think what we found in the last two games is that there may be two ways that other teams can cause us a problem, right? Villa, I thought tactically, were brilliant because they basically matched our very high and aggressive counter press, and they had the energy and the dynamism to do it. They had three in midfield, so they outnumbered us in midfield, and you know, of the three in midfield, they absolutely were right up the arse of Kovacic and, of course, Saul. Now, okay, I know you can mitigate it by saying, well, Saul had an absolute mare, but I think tactically they had it spot on. Of course, and they had a go. They created far more than we did. They had more chances. If they had been able to finish and we hadn't defended so well, that could have been a very different game. And, of course, we've seen the alternative to that with Zenit, where they basically park the bus, which we found very hard to break down, as we invariably do. And, of course, Nuno and Spurs could do either, and it could be a problem.
You have to remember, though, the Villa game, they attacked. Most of their attacks were done at their left-hand side, our right-hand side, because Odoi was playing right wing-back, if you remember, and Saul had a very bad game. So these were the two areas that let them through, because Odoi doesn't convince as the right wing-back. So I think there were extenuating circumstances for that, actually.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I don't think that was that, because of the typical performance, that allowed them in, I think. But Kovacic had a brilliant game, as he did against Zenit, who's playing completely out of his skin. So I think he'll, for all Reece James's failings during the week, as you said, I think he had nowhere to get through. He only provided one cross for Lukaku, where Lukaku was actually quite close. I'll be intrigued to see if he has any space at all, Reece James. I think he'll put the ball on a sixpence for Lukaku, and I think Lukaku might score a couple as a consequence, actually, unless if they have a way of dealing with him. It may be then that he does a kind of suffocating game, which he's capable of doing, the manager, but because he's done that at Wolves. But let's see. Now, I think it was revealing that when Ziyech went off, I think one of the problems Ziyech has got is that he's a winger, and he, again, with Lukaku, there isn't really a place for him to play. He seems to come inside all the time or hang around behind him, and he's not very good at that, because he's out-and-out winger who gets ball in whips the beautiful ball in. It's almost Robin-like, the way he wanders in from the left or the right and uses his foot to curl it. And he's not playing in that position. I think he's therefore suffering accordingly. And I think Havertz, when he came on against Zenit, was actually much better, because he's much more fluid. And I thought we improved generally in the second half because Havertz was there. I would agree with you. I think Havertz will start. I think he'll play Lukaku. He'll play Mount, who, to my horror, Ron was there, and I was sitting next to Big Ron. And Ron said, Mount is a Championship player. You know, he's not really quite good enough for the for Chelsea or for. He said it's just the hype. The hype has got him where he is.
Yeah, well, Ron is a fuckwit, and you can tell him that from me.
He's a Millwall fan.
And he's a Millwall fuckwit. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but Ron isn't qualified to talk about Chelsea. He's never seen these heights.
No. Yes, I agree. But Mason, you could see that at the moment, one of the things that isn't quite firing is this ability. They're playing really excellent football. I have to say, the third goal, for example, that Lukaku's second goal against Villa was absolutely phenomenal. The number of passes that went, just the first time passing. And you thought, yeah, this is absolutely slick Chelsea. And then Dave got it and did the nutmeg and just put it to Lukaku. Whap, you're in. Now, if we can play like that in certain moves, Tottenham just will not survive against that kind of football. But you could see it was creaking a bit, because Mason, as in both games, Mason didn't play in that one, but in this way, all the others as well, was the final pass, which is slightly off and was intercepted. That happened on several occasions. The dilemma you've got in the Premier League at the moment is, and not even the moment, always the Premier League, if the minute you give the ball away, it's a move and it's up the other end. And luckily, we've got Christensen playing out of his skin. Fantastic. Both games. Rudiger playing out of his skin. Silva came on in the Villa game and was brilliant. So you've got all these backups. And Dave comes on. And if you've played centre half, you know actually that he's going to put in a good shift. It's when Dave starts playing the right wing back, it's not quite as good. And yet there he was providing a wonderful centre for Lukaku to score. So, you know, they've got all these strengths. I don't have a problem with them defensively, the team. I think the team's great. It's just, it's midfield and the attack at the moment. And I think it'll come good. It really will. As he said today in the presser, he's confident that it will, and I'm confident it will as well. So, and we're still winning despite it not coming good.
We are, and that's the mark of champions, but it's also the mark of having an excellent defence, which means we don't concede, even when we probably should, and a world-class striker who can take, you know, who only needs one chance to score.
Absolutely.
Dane, I had a chat with the wonderful, beautiful man, legend that is Kerry Dixon today, because he was phoning in his Prem predictions, but not in the way that one would commonly use that rather pejorative term. He is so competitive. He wants to win this. So do you know what he did before last week? He's on last Friday. He said, "Oh, you got to." No, it was before the Zenit game. He said, "You got to like send me screenshots of the league tables because I'm going to be seeing Canners and the others tonight, and I want to rub it in." You know, he's just absolutely brilliant. So, but in amongst the Prem predictions chat I had with him, we were talking about, you know, what's going on with Chelsea behind Lukaku. And he, I think, like Adam was saying earlier on, was saying it was very interesting last season. We had this fluidity, you know, the three of them were moving across, you know, and interchanging. And that was, as Adam was saying, was quite useful for us. But he really does rate Lukaku. And Kerry being Kerry as a great number nine for Chelsea's basis, and make sure you know get the ball to Lukaku because he'll score, you know. But I think my point about the wingers and square pegs in round holes is also very true. And I was wondering, and I've wondered this in the article that I've sent to Adam and Football London today, is that when you've got you know, a really well organised, and it's very easy now. I mean, anybody, as managers have often said, it's easy to coach people how to be defensive. It's harder to coach them how to be creative. So Zenit did a great job, and they were well coached and well organised in every aspect to try and stifle Chelsea. And I think the only choice you have in though, I mean, you know, bearing in mind that usually the first thing you say is, okay, go wide and get it into the box. So they stop that. So I think in situations like that, you need one of two things. You either need to put another striker on, go two up front, which gives them far more to deal with. And if they're more worried about Lukaku, then the other striker is going to be in the position to take advantage of any space, whereas our two behind never seem to be in the right place to do that. Or you need a real proper number 10, a creative playmaker, a player who has genius and flair, who can unlock the defence on their own, as in a Hazard or a Zola, players of that ilk.
Or a Modric.
Well, I think Modric, well, maybe when he was younger, because Modric plays a lot deeper now. But, you know, a proper creative number, you know, the classic number 10, who drifts in the hole, creates, can drift in and out of the game, but is a genius and has flair and just creates something out of nothing. Because that's how you beat stubborn teams. And we don't have, I don't think, in the entire side, a number 10. Because Mount is a number 8 in my book all day long. Havertz, I'm not quite sure what he is, but he is quite special. I'll give you that. But I don't think he's a number 10. And Pulisic, I don't think so. He's a winger. Ziyech is a winger. Hudson-Odoi is a winger. Werner is a winger. So I think that's we have a gap there. We have a, you know, a missing piece there, I think. I'm going to ask Dane first, because John JK's kind of agreed. What do you think, Dane?
Well, to an element, what we're saying is, no matter how brilliant we are organised structurally under Tuchel, we're saying there's a little element of square pegs and round holes to an extent. You know, I really like Havertz as a striker or a second striker. Ziyech can play in a free or on the wing. I feel sorry for Ziyech. He was definitely bought for a Frank style of play in Ajax. He had lots of pockets and spaces and fast players ahead of him. He hasn't got that at Chelsea. So again, it's a bit of a square peg and a round hole. Like you said, Mount as well, a number 8. Can you push him back in the holding two?
Well, put him into a 3 in midfield, Dane. That's what I would do.
He would have to change his formation. I think he's only done that once, as he's played the 4-2-3-1-2 call, and it was a little bit lopsided. Hudson-Odoi winger, Pulisic winger. It is an element of square pegs and round holes, but we're getting away with it because we're so well organised. we know we've talked about Lukaku. I think he's only had two real chances since he signed for Chelsea, and that was in the games against Arsenal. Last week at Villa, they was half chances at best. But like you've both said, you spend 100 million for those players to score their half chances, and he's been absolutely amazing. On Sunday, I'd like Kante to be in there. I don't think he will. I agree with you. I think he'll play Havertz. He really likes Christensen. Does that mean that Reece James misses out and Dave goes to right wing back and Christensen comes in on the right side with Silva? Again, I'd like you, Chidge. I'd like to see Werner off of Lukaku, but then who sits behind him? We haven't got a number 10, like you said. And it'll either be Mount or Havertz. I think, you know, again, I don't want to get into a debate of Mount. You know, we've all got Twitter. We all view what people write. But it's so easy to say he doesn't have a good game because he's in that position to, you know, to attack, to try and find chances for Lukaku to try and spread the ball. But he did very well defensively as well. He's so intelligent. He's smart. He blocks areas. He screens areas really well. So attacking wise, yeah, he didn't have a good game. He gave the ball away a few times and like JK put us in trouble. But when they had the ball, he was very good defensively. You always notice little things when you haven't had a drink at football. So I know.
No. I usually how that. Shit it is in my case.
Yeah. So I noticed that. So yeah, it is interesting. I'd love to see Werner off Lukaku, but he's going to play the two behind and it's probably going to be Mount and Havertz.
I think you're right. And I mean, you know, just to have another go back at Ron, because even though I had a go at him, I still don't think it was enough. you know, there is not one former football player, either Chelsea or other team or football pundit, that thinks that Mount is shit. They all think he is absolutely superb.
I agree.
So
I agree.
Why does Ron think he knows more than the entire footballing professional world?
He used to play with Johnny Bumpstead.
What, tiddlywinks? Because he might as fucking well have done.
What's happened to Ron's rumours?
The rumour is he's an idiot, I think.
He forgot. Well, he hasn't been speaking to JT much. That was the source of the rumours. And yeah. JT, I don't think, is receiving. JT was getting the rumours via Frank. The fact that Frank is no longer involved, there is now the conduit has been cut off. So I don't think we hear any more Ron's rumours. We hear Ron's supposition. He comes up with ideas, you know, of who he thinks are good players.
Yeah.
We get that, but that's not really much interest. I didn't actually say, I think Alonso will play, and I think we'll probably be completely wrong, and it'll be Chilwell, and I think he'll play Christensen. I don't think he'll play Dave. I think Dave will be on the subs bench. I think he'll play Silva and Christensen and Rudiger.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Have you been drinking from the same Kool-Aid as bloody Ron, mate?
One I have, yeah, been
that's
affected.
A big pitch at Tottenham, though, isn't it? I would like to see Reece up that right side. It is a very big pitch. That's why I'd like Werner.
I think Reece will provide crosses for Lukaku in a way that didn't happen. We didn't play in the Villa game, obviously, because he was suspended, but didn't happen in the Zenit game because they stifled him.
He'll
have a great opportunity to do this. I really think he will, because we'll see, he'll just feed off it. Because in the past we've not had it. Tammy's doing quite well, isn't he? I was going to say Tammy didn't seem to quite gel with him, but Tammy's doing well at Roma, isn't he?
Very well. He's a good player, mate. It's a good player.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I never ever doubted that. All right, so this has been a very interesting chat. Actually, I've really quite enjoyed this. We've kind of gone down some very interesting little rabbit holes here. But how do you see it going, Dane?
Well, I can only go on my prediction. I can't change that. And in our little predictions league, which we're in, and I went to Chelsea.
You can use that. You've got it. But you now, having chatted to us, particularly the fount of knowledge that is Chidge, and the fount of knowledge that
what are you after?
That's what my dad used to say to me. Oh, I don't like that.
I think I'm sticking to. I'm going. Yeah, I'm going to stick. I fancied 2-0. If we just use the space to our advantage, as I said, it's a big pitch, and if we have Reece playing, and you know, whether it be Alonso or Chilwell, it's probably Alonso. Chilwell has not played enough. I'd love Kante to play, as Chidge said, because on that big pitch he covers so much space. But yeah, if we take advantage, I think we'll win 2-0.
Okay, JK, how do you think it's going to pan out?
Well, I predicted 2-1 on my predictions, but
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. huge trouble. No, I did quite. I did better last week. I got 72 points last week. Because the week before I got minus 14. So I am on the ascendancy.
I do not have a leg to stand on. I'm just absolutely beyond shit this season. But mind you, having said that, I worked it out last week, and I don't know if I shared my pain with you at any stage, but I had five games, right, where I was one goal out in each of those five games. And, yeah. If one goal different, and I would have got 250 points, mate.
Yeah. I'm the same, absolutely the same.
But so we're only that far off from being geniuses.
I was doing it earlier because I've got quite a big... Oh, no, it's a game tonight. I was doing it earlier, and I looked at our league, and I was like, the bloody hell am I? I didn't realise there was a second page.
That is the indignity and the humiliation of it, that my sole ambition at the moment this season is to get off page two onto page one.
I'd like to get out of the 1,500s because I'm down there at the moment.
It's just awful. Anyway,
go up slightly higher.
JK, yeah. So how do you think it's going to go?
I think we'll score three. So whether they, I think they'll score one possibly, but even then I'm not convinced they'll do that. So I'll say 3-0 actually.
Do you know what? I think it's an incredibly. I mean, we all want us to smash them.
So depend on whether Kepa plays. I think if Kepa plays, it'll be 3-1.
Because you think Maundy might be unfit?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I really hope not for obvious reasons, but because he is just phenomenally good. He's played 50 matches for Chelsea and he's kept 29 clean sheets.
Yeah, phenomenal.
I mean, I think we need to stop talking about Maundy in terms of, oh, well, he was just kind of somebody we had to get in because Kepa was shit.
Make weight. Never, ever.
This is a world...
By all accounts, Chidge, we were in for that Donnarumma. Yeah. He was in. It was only Mendy apparently surprised everyone. Well, not Czech, because Czech rated him quite highly. And they soon, stopped contacts with Donnarumma.
Well, there you go. But I actually think this keeper is a genuinely world-class keeper, mate. So
I do, yeah.
I would be very worried if he is unfit. But, hey, we don't know that. But, JK and Dane, I think that this is a really difficult game to call, actually. I really do, because we don't know what Nuno is going to do. Because you can look at it on paper and you can say they've half their team missing or half injured. You know, and on paper, as Ricky very honestly said, you look at the teams on paper, we're two goals better than them as a side, I think. But it's a derby. They don't score or concede many goals. We don't score or concede many goals. So, your intelligence would say there's not going to be many goals in this. And historically, recently, there haven't been either. But the thing that really queers the pitch, as it were, is that we all know, having seen enough football, that derbies can be mental and you can get these outlier results, like 6-1 at the Lane. You can get them and it could easily happen. And the mad thing about it is it can go each way. I mean, that's the frightening thought too. So I think it's really, really hard to call it. However, that having been said, I just do think that we are so good defensively at the moment. I'm touching wood, but we are so good defensively at the moment. I think the key to that is Maundy starting, I have to be honest. But we're so good defensively and so well organised across the pitch that we are such a tough nut to score against and a tough nut to crack. So I don't see us losing because I just don't see us conceding many goals, if any. I think the issue remains creatively and what we do up there. So I think a lot will depend on whether, Nuno goes for it or Nuno parks the bus. But I think either way, we've got enough to get past them because we've got Lukaku, basically. So, I'm never predicting anything but a Chelsea win or not to lose. But I've gone 2-1 in Prem predictions and I'm sticking with that because I think that using your noodle, it tells you it's going to be cagey, it's going to be tight, there won't be many goals, but we are better than them. So we'll edge it, I think. But you're right.
I've just gone via this Reece James. If he's given any freedom at all, he said the pitch is very big, and he whips any of those crosses over. I reckon if Lukaku doesn't get on the end of them, somebody else will, because they'll be so worried about Lukaku getting on the end of them.
Yeah, I mean, of a point of related interest, by the way, I was listening to the wonderful Hawksby and Jacob show today, which I really do like listening to in the afternoon when I'm not talking to clients and things. And they do a predictions thing too, which made me chuckle because I was thinking, oh yeah, we know the pain of that one. And they had Sam Matterface on as their... They always get a commentator on. It was Matterface this week. And, of course, Matterface is a Chelsea fan. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is do you know what? I went
Chelsea TV for a while as well.
He was, yeah. I did a podcast with him decades ago. I mean, well, it wasn't decades ago, but I mean, it was after I started doing the Chelsea Fancast. But I went to some pub with a mate of mine who, funny enough, is a Spurs fan, and Sam was really just starting out then. I should get him on here. You owe me one. I went on your bloody podcast, mate. Anyway, he was. Do you know what he said for his prediction? He's gone 4-0. You know. And they all looked at him like he was start raving mad. And he said, yeah, but, you know, Chelsea are that good, and they are going to click sometime soon. And when they click, they're going to give somebody a hammering. Which I think is really picking up on what you're saying, JK, that it could go that way. You know, if it clicks, if Mount, you know, finds his passing feet and his shooting feet, if Havertz, you know, gets his head out of his ass and starts playing like the silky player we know he is, if Reece is putting those balls in for, you know, Lukaku, because the reality about football is it's a game of margins. And at the moment, we're on the wrong side of those margins, I think. But it's going to click sometime.
We're on the wrong side of those margins and still winning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. But I think when we get them right, we are going to dish out a few hammerings.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's on Sunday, eh?
Oh, please.
I don't care how many points I lose in the Prem Predictions League if Chelsea issue a... due thrashing to Tottenham Hotspurs on Sunday.
Yes.
I would be very happy. There we go. Now, I realise in all of our excitement about talking about the football, which is exactly how it should be, I've completely forgotten to give a veritable plug for the football prizes competition this week. Of course, we had the Didier Drogba shirt last week, which I don't know who won, but that finished on Wednesday night. But this week, you can win a signed and framed Callum Hudson-Odoi shirt. And it's the last season's away shirt, so the Palace shirt, he says, curmudgeonly-like. So there we go. So it's a Callum Hudson-Odoi signed and framed shirt. Tickets for £4.95 each. The draw ends next Wednesday on the 22nd of September. There are 99 tickets on sale. So you need to get in there before it sells out. So I shall remind you again on Monday's show. But the place to go to is footballprizes.co.uk/product/Hudson-Odoi. So get on it quick, peeps. And I'll put a tweet out with all the info sometime over the weekend, no doubt. So there you go. That, I'm afraid, is all we've got time for. JK and I will be back on Monday with an unknown guest because, of course, idiot features here forgot to do the schedule this week. You noticed in my WhatsApp group when I very contritely mentioned to you all earlier.
And Dane do it?
I don't know. We're always happy to have Dane back. Always happy.
The worry is I'm at a wedding on Sunday, so I'm not watching the game. And
you're not the same wedding as Ricky, are you, mate?
Oh no, he's tomorrow. He said, right. Yeah. No, I did think about it. I thought, shall I offer? But then I thought, well, yeah, if I haven't really watched the game, I'm going to get is, I suppose, the highlights on Sunday night.
Don't worry about it, mate. But we'll grab somebody. Somebody will be free. We always get somebody. So there you go. So me and JK, for certain, we have selection issues for Monday, but we will resolve them. As far as that's concerned, it's been brilliant having you on the show, as always, Dane. What a treat having you 2 weeks running, which is lovely. Enjoy your weekend.
Absolute pleasure. Can I just actually waste your time for a little? I just want to readdress something from last week. I got a bit of stick from a friend of the show and Chicago Blue, Brian Wolfe. Not much of a surprise, because that cheeky git has always got something to say.
Hasn't he, Joe?
It was all to do with my choice of words when you asked me last week what part of me was American. And at the time, my thought process was to go for a load of combined qualities. But because I started with two, which was deemed as negative, you then joked in, well, we've just lost half our followers. So I'm going to take a leaf out of all good politicians and pass the buck and blame you. You made me lose my train of thought. So I'd like to readdress the original question and update my answer. I think I've got the perfect blend of both nations and a little bit of glorious Irish to put just to top it all off.
Well, you always want to have a little bit of Irish.
No French?
No. You don't want a bit of French.
American, a bit of Irish.
Bit of Irish, no problem. Bit of French, no. Well, there we go. Funny enough, I got a text from Brian. He's over for the Spurs game. He's arrived, yeah. I think, this weekend.
Might meet up with him before the Villa game.
Yeah, I can't make the Villa game because it's fucking midweek again, although I might try. We'll see. But anyway, it means I have to bunk out of supervision, which is a bit of a naughty thing to do, but it could be done. But
he he was trying to get the Atlas as well for the.
Well, yeah. I know he's just texted me. So it's all about the City game. Me and Brian are going to meet up and get very, very hammered. So that's the plan. Anyway,
brilliant.
Enough of my drinking habits. Always lovely to see you, Dane. As I said, and as Thank you, Mr. Kidd, the star of stage, screen, and Chelsea fan bite, did another good one under very trying circumstances last week.
Sorry about the lack of light, but no, also
it's night time.
Indeed it was, but also I'd had an incident in the stand, so I was slightly in a state.
What, is this at the Zenit game?
Yeah.
So you had another incident?
Well, no, it was part two of the incident.
It was the same incident?
Yeah. Same incident, yeah.
All right,
yeah,
well, we'll go off air in a minute, and then you can tell me all about
it. Yeah, I'll explain what happened, yeah.
All right, well, there you go. But it's great.
You know, I'll make sure the one at the weekend is... has a street light at least shining on me.
If I was you again, like Liverpool, you don't do it in Seven Sisters Road, mate.
No, indeed, you know, absolutely.
Get to relative safety.
I think I might even do it. Yes, possibly in Hammersmith.
Yeah, that would be perfectly acceptable, and I wouldn't mind. All right.
Yeah,
it can be a late night fan bite.
I'm just trying to get a landmark in because I got the butcher's hook in. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, I will.
You don't want to be hanging around that horrible shithole doing that. No.
No, you don't. Absolutely.
So there we go. I was about to say, because they pick on women, children and shirters. I'm not quite sure which category that would put you in, but, you know.
Shirter?
Well, people who wear shirts, as they, you know.
Oh, good. I thought
civilians, as the old firms used to call them.
Yeah. Oh, okay, right. Thank you. Yeah.
But there you go. Oh, JK, absolutely lovely to see you. Enjoy the game, because obviously you're going. Fair play to you for doing that. Everybody else who's going, really enjoy it. It's always a cracking visit up there. Right. Mixler people, you've been legends as always. Lovely to see you all in here on a Friday evening with us. And I meant to say a massive shout out to Eric Morabito. Because I think he's had some good news or something. I don't know. I can't remember. But I here we go. I think he's had a baby. Not himself, obviously. But there we go. Right. Very nice to hear Chidge and the gang's dulcet tones. We just brought my son home from the hospital. So there you go.
Oh.
Eric, congratulations on the birth of your son. We're all cheering for you and raising a glass in your honour. So well done. But everybody else in Mixler, of course, thanks for listening too. We will, of course, see you all next week on Monday night to talk about the Spurs game and have a look at the Villa game. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, keep it Chels. Up the Chels! It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.